Chapter 4. The Chase. The women's hysterical screams had died down. The police whistles had stopped. The two ambulances had driven off, one taking the beheaded body and the severed head to the morgue, the other carrying the beautiful conductress wounded by glass shards. The street sweepers in white aprons had cleaned up the glass and poured sand over the bloody puddles. And all the while, Ivan Nikolaevich sat upon the bench he had collapsed on, unable to reach the turnstile. Several times he attempted to rise, but his legs would not listen. Homeless, was struck by a sort of paralysis. The poet dashed towards the turnstile as soon as he heard the first scream. He had seen the head as it bounced along the pavement. It drove him into such a frenzy that he bit his own hand as he collapsed on the bench, drawing blood. Naturally, he forgot all about the insane German, and only struggled to comprehend how it could be that one moment he had been talking to Berlioz, and a minute later, the head. Distressed people ran through the alley past the poet, shouting, but Ivan Nikolaevich was oblivious to their words. Suddenly, two women collided in front of him. One of them, sharp-nosed and bare-headed, yelled at the other right over the poet's ear.
"Anushka! Anushka! From Sadovaya! That's her handiwork, all right. Got some sunflower oil from the grocery, and done went and broke a litre bottle on the spindle. Messed up her skirt. Oh, she cussed and cussed, and the poor guy must have slipped and fallen on the rails."
Of all she had shouted, a single word stuck in Ivan Nikolaevich's troubled mind. "Anushka. Anushka. Anushka," muttered the poet, looking round anxiously. "Hold it. Hold it." The word Anushka quickly led to the words sunflower oil, and then, for some reason, Pontius Pilate. The poet rejected Pilate and began to reconstruct the chain that began with Anushka. It came together very quickly and immediately pointed to the insane professor. "Excuse me. Why, he had said that the meeting would not occur because Anushka had spilled the oil. And what do you know? It certainly won't occur now." Moreover, he had clearly said that Berlioz would be beheaded by a woman. "Yes, yes, yes, the conductress was a woman, wasn't she? What's going on here, huh?" There could not be a shred of doubt that the mysterious consultant had known the exact circumstances of Berlioz's horrific death in advance. Two thoughts pierced the poet's brain. One, "He's no madman, that's nonsense." And another, "What if he arranged this whole thing himself?" "But how, may I ask?" "Oh, no, you don't. We'll get to the bottom of this." With a superhuman effort, Ivan Nikolaevich rose from the bench and dashed back to where he had conversed with the professor. Fortunately, it turned out that the latter was still there. The streetlights had already lit up on Boronaya, and a golden moon hung over the patriarchs. In the ever-deceptive moonlight, it appeared to Ivan Nikolaevich that instead of a cane, the professor stood holding a sword under his arm. The worming ex-choirmaster sat on the very spot that Ivan Nikolaevich had recently occupied. He had clipped a blatantly unnecessary pince-nez onto his nose, with one lens cracked and the other missing entirely. This had the effect of making the checkered man look even sleazier than he did when directing Berlioz to the tracks. Ivan approached the professor with a chilling heart, and, glancing at his face, ascertained the absence of any sign of madness therein.
"Confess, who are you?" Ivan asked in a hollow voice.
The foreigner frowned, looking at Ivan as if he was seeing him for the first time, and answered unpleasantly, "Not understand, Russian speaking."
"He doesn't understand,"
the choirmaster squeezed in from the bench, even though no one had asked him to explain the foreigner's words.
"Don't play dumb," Ivan said menacingly, even as he felt a chill in the pit of his stomach. "A minute ago, you spoke perfect Russian. You are neither a German nor a professor. You are a spy and a murderer. Your papers!" he cried fiercely.
The mysterious professor twisted his already crooked mouth in distaste and shrugged his shoulders.
"Mister!"
the despicable choirmaster butted in again.
"Why are you bothering a foreign tourist? There'll be most serious repercussions for you."
Meanwhile, the suspicious professor put on a haughty look, turned, and started walking away from Ivan. Ivan felt lost, breathless. He turned to the choirmaster.
"Hey, mister, help me stop a criminal. It's your duty to help me."
The choirmaster livened up immensely and leapt to his feet, bawling.
"What criminal? Where? A foreign criminal? This one?"
The choirmaster's little eyes sparkled gleefully.
"Well, if he's a criminal, the first thing we ought to do is yell, 'Help!' or else he'll get away. Come on, let's do it together. Now!"
And the choirmaster flung open his mouth. Confused, Ivan followed the clowning choirmaster's advice and shouted, "Help!" But the choirmaster cheated and never said a word. Ivan's hoarse, solitary yell brought no positive results. Two girls shrank away from him and he heard the word drunk.
"Oh, so you two are in cahoots," Ivan cried, growing angry. "What? Are you mocking me now? Let me by."
Ivan dashed to the right, and so did the choirmaster. Ivan went to the left, and the bastard did likewise.
"Are you getting in my way on purpose?"
Ivan cried furiously.
"I'll hand you over to the police too."
Ivan attempted to grab the renegade by the sleeve, but missed and ended up with a handful of nothing. It was as if the choirmaster had fallen through the earth. Ivan gasped and then saw the despicable foreigner in the distance. He was already at the exit to Patriarch's Lane, and he was not alone. The peculiar choirmaster had managed to join him. But that was not all. A third member of the group appeared out of nowhere. It was a cat. Fat as a boar and black as soot, or a raven. His whiskers brashly styled into a cavalry officer's moustache. The trio moved out onto Patriarch's Lane, the cat walking along on his hind legs. Ivan hurried after the villains and realized immediately that catching up with them would be very difficult. In a flash, the trio cleared the lane and appeared on Spiridonovka. No matter how much speed Ivan put on, the distance between him and his targets did not decrease in the slightest. Before the poet could gather his wits, he had run out of quiet Spiridonovka and ended up on Nikitsky Gate, where his situation worsened. There was a dense crowd here. Ivan bumped into some of the pedestrians and was promptly sworn at. Moreover, it was here that the villainous gang decided to apply a favourite bandit's move. It split up. With great skill, the choirmaster squeezed into a moving bus hurtling towards Arbat Square and escaped. Having lost one of his targets, Ivan concentrated his attention on the cat and witnessed how this strange animal approached the footboard of an A-tram standing at its stop, rudely bumped off a screaming woman, grasped the handrail, and even attempted to give the conductress 10 kopecks through a window left open on account of the heat. The cat's behaviour stunned Ivan so much that he froze beside a grocery store on the corner, where subsequently he was infinitely more stunned by the reaction of the conductress. The moment she saw the cat climb onto the tram, she screamed with a rage that made her whole body shake.
"No cats! No boarding with cats! Scram! Off! Before I call the police!"
Both the conductress and the passengers were oblivious to the heart of the issue. Not that a cat was clambering onto a tram, which would be half the trouble, but that he intended to pay. The cat proved to be not only a solvent, but also a well-disciplined animal. At the first shriek from the conductress, he ceased his advance, descended from the tram step, and sat down by the stop, stroking his whiskers with the coin. But as soon as the conductress yanked the signal cord and the tram took off, the cat acted like anyone else who, though banished from a tram, is nonetheless in need of a ride. Letting all three cars by, the cat leaped on to the rear coupling of the last one, grabbed a protruding hose with his paw, and rode off, thus saving himself 10 kopecks. Preoccupied with the foul feline, Ivan nearly missed the most important of the three, the professor. Fortunately, the man had not yet managed to steal away. Ivan noticed the grey beret among the crowd at the top of the former Bolshoi Nikitsky, now known as Herzen Street. In the blink of an eye, Ivan was there himself, but to no avail. The poet quickened his pace and even broke into a light run, pushing aside the passers-by, but could not get an inch closer to the professor. No matter how upset, Ivan still found time to marvel at the supernatural speed of the chase. No more than 20 seconds had passed since he left Nikitsky Gate, and already the lights of Arbat Square were blinding him. In a few more seconds, Ivan Nikolaevich found himself in some dark alley with sloping pavements, where he tripped and smashed his knee. Another lit thoroughfare, Kropotkin Street, followed by another alley, then Ostrozhenka, then one more wretched, filthy, dimly lit alley. It was here that Ivan Nikolaevich completely lost the man he was after. The professor had vanished. Ivan Nikolaevich was not stumped for long, however, for he suddenly realized that the professor could be nowhere else but house number 13, and definitely apartment 47. Bursting into the entrance, Ivan Nikolaevich flew up to the second floor, quickly located the apartment, and rang the doorbell impatiently. His wait was not long. A girl of about 5 years of age opened the door and ran off somewhere, saying nothing to the visitor. The front hall was a giant, incredibly derelict room, dimly illuminated by a tiny coal lamp hanging from the tall ceiling, which was black with dirt. A bicycle without tires hung on a wall, and a giant iron-banded chest stood beneath it. A winter hat lay on a shelf beneath the coat rack, its long ear flaps hanging down. Behind one of the doors, a loud male voice recited poetry angrily from the radio. Ivan Nikolaevich was not confused by the unfamiliar surroundings in the slightest, and headed straight into the hallway, figuring, "He must be hiding in the bathroom, of course!" The hallway was dark. Bumping into walls, Ivan saw a faint strip of light under a door, felt for a doorknob, and pulled on it lightly. The latch came off, and by a stroke of luck, or so he thought, Ivan found himself in the bathroom. The luck was not all good, however. Ivan was blasted with warm vapour. To the light of coals smouldering in a lamp, he made out large basins hanging on the walls and a bathtub covered in hideous black spots where the enamel had come off. The bathtub contained a naked woman, all soaped up and holding a sponge. She squinted at the intruding Ivan nearsightedly, and, evidently mistaking him for someone else in the infernal lighting, said quietly and cheerfully, "Kire, stop fooling around. Have you gone mad? Fyodor Ivanovich will be back any minute. Get out of here this instant." And she waved her sponge at Ivan. The misunderstanding was clear, and Ivan Nikolaevich was obviously to blame. He chose not to acknowledge it, however, and only exclaimed reproachfully, "You hussy!" Immediately thereafter, he somehow found himself in the kitchen. The murky room was empty, save for the dozen or so extinguished Primus burners that stood silently on the stove. Soaking through a dusty window that had not been wiped for years, a solitary moonbeam cast miserly light upon a forgotten religious icon in the corner, encrusted with dust and cobwebs, the ends of 2 church candles peeking out from behind its frame. A smaller paper icon was tacked on underneath its larger cousin. No one knows what went through Ivan's head just then, but before leaving via the back entrance, he appropriated one of the candles as well as the paper icon. Carrying these items and muttering to himself, Ivan left the unknown apartment, embarrassed at his recent bathroom experience and involuntarily guessing at the identity of the insolent Kire fellow, wondering if he was the owner of the nasty winter hat with ear flaps. The poet surveyed the wretched, deserted alley in search of the fugitive, who was nowhere to be found. Then Ivan said firmly to himself, "He must be at Moscow River. Onwards!" Someone probably ought to have asked Ivan Nikolaevich why he thought the professor to be at Moscow River and not some other place. Sadly, there was no one around to ask him. The disgusting alley was completely empty. In no time at all, Ivan Nikolaevich appeared on the granite steps of the Moscow River Amphitheatre. Taking off his clothes, Ivan entrusted them to a pleasant bearded man smoking a hand-rolled cigarette next to his own possessions, which consisted of a torn white shirt and old unlaced boots. After waving his arms a bit to cool down, Ivan took a swallow dive into the water. The water was so cold it took his breath away, and for a moment he even thought he might not be able to reach the surface again. But reach it he did, huffing and snorting, eyes wide with horror, and began to swim in the black, oil-smelling water amid the broken zigzags of the embankment lights. When the wet Ivan hopped back up the steps to where he had left the bearded man to guard his clothes, it turned out that both the latter and the former, that is, the bearded man himself, had gone missing. Instead of his heap of clothes, Ivan found a pair of striped long johns, the torn shirt, the candle, the icon, and a box of matches. Shaking his fist at someone in impotent rage, Ivan dressed himself in what was left. At this point, two considerations began to worry him. First, that he had lost his Masolit card, which he never parted with, and second, that he might have trouble walking the streets of Moscow in such an outfit as his. Long johns, after all. It was nobody's business, of course, but then again, it could very well cause some nuisance or delay. Ivan tore off the buttons that fastened the long johns at the ankles, hoping that they could now pass for light trousers. He gathered up the icon, the candle, and the matches, and pressed on, saying to himself, "Griboyedov, without a doubt, he's there." The city was already living the nightlife. Trucks flew by in clouds of dust, chains rattling, men lounging belly up on piles of sacks in the rear. All the windows were open, with an orange lampshade burning in each. And all these windows, all the doors, all the gates, roofs and lofts, all the basements and all the courtyards, hoarsely belted out the polonaise from the opera Eugene Onegin. Ivan Nikolaevich's fears were fully justified. Pedestrians noticed him and stared. As a result, he decided to avoid the main roads and travel by side streets, where people are less nosy and less likely to bother a barefoot man with questions about his long johns, which stubbornly refused to look like trousers. Ivan plunged into the mysterious web of Arbat alleys, hugging the walls, glancing round furtively, constantly looking back, sometimes hiding in doorways, and avoiding intersections with traffic lights and luxurious doors of embassy mansions. Throughout his entire arduous journey, he was inexpressibly tortured by the ubiquitous orchestra accompanying the heavy bass that sang of its love for Tatiana.